KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
On Friday, an immigration judge found that the government's two-page memo finding Mahmoud Khalil deportable is sufficient evidence, and so now our fight continues in immigration court, but more importantly, in federal court.
We'll get the latest on the former Columbia graduate student Mahmoud Khalil, protest leader and negotiator, detained for over a month in Louisiana. Then, as President Trump meets with a man who calls himself the world's coolest dictator, El Salvador's President Nayib Bukele, where is Kilmer Abrego Garcia?
That was the most shocking thing of all, that the attorney for the government wasn't even prepared to answer the question, where is Kilmer Abrego today and what is his custodial status?
We'll speak with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Maria Hinojosa. She's just back from attempting to get into CECOT, the supermax prison in El Salvador, where Kilmer Abrego Garcia is being held. Then, Suave.
My name is Suave Gonzalez, a former juvenile lifer who was incarcerated at the age of 17. I met Maria in a prison cell, and she told me that I could be the voice for the voiceless. And I think that when you listen to season two, you will understand what them words really meant.
We'll be joined by David Luis Suave Gonzalez and Maria Hinojosa talking about the second series of Suave, the Pulitzer Prize-winning podcast on the criminal justice system, and Suave now out of prison. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's bombed the last functioning hospital in the northern Gaza Strip, killing a child who asphyxiated from a lack of oxygen and leaving sick and wounded Palestinians on the street with nowhere to go for treatment. The assault on the Al-Ahli Arab Hospital in Gaza City came during a weekend of relentless artillery and missile attacks that killed and injured scores of Palestinians. Overnight, an Israeli airstrike killed an entire family of 10 in Khan Yunis, including children as young as 3 years old. In Deir al-Balah, mourners gathered Sunday to honor six brothers killed when an Israeli strike hit their car. Their father, Zaki Abu Mahdi, said his sons were delivering food and water to Palestinians left hungry by Israel's total siege on Gaza, which is now in its seventh week.
After the war began, they started volunteering to prepare meals for people in need. They don't carry weapons. They're not resistance fighters. They're civilians. The 10-year-old child was out helping his brothers just to get something to eat under this siege. Why would you do this to them? What did they do wrong?
In Israel, over 1,600 former Israeli paratroopers, soldiers, and intelligence agents have signed a letter demanding a ceasefire deal that would see the release of all remaining hostages, even if that means an end to Israel's assault on Gaza. The open letter reads, in part, quote, "We identify with the assertion that, at this time, the war serves mainly political and personal interests rather than security interests," unquote. Yemen's Houthis say overnight U.S. airstrikes killed at least 7 people, wounding 29 others. The continued U.S. attacks came after Israel's military set it down 2 ballistic missiles fired from Yemen that triggered air raid sirens across Israel. World leaders have condemned a Russian attack on the city of Sumy in northeastern Ukraine Sunday that killed 34 people and injured 117 others. 2 children were among the dead. Witnesses say a pair of ballistic missiles struck Sumy's city center as crowds were gathering to celebrate the Palm Sunday holiday.
When the explosion happened, my mother was in the kitchen cooking some food for lunch. Please have a look. A cupboard was right here. Now it lies here on the floor. It fell and its doors cut her head.
German Chancellor Friedrich Merz accused Russia of serious war crimes. French President Emmanuel Macron said Russia showed blatant disregard for human lives and international law. President Donald Trump called the attack on Sumy terrible, but said he was, quote, told it was a mistake. In Kyiv, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said the attack showed Russia is not interested in negotiating a ceasefire.
Wars only end when war crimes are not forgotten and when the aggressor is met with enough pressure. This is not happening now. Last Friday marked 1 month since Russia rejected the American proposal of a full, unconditional ceasefire. They feel no fear, and that's why there are missiles. That's why there are 100 combat drones each night.
On Friday, U.S. and Ukrainian officials met to discuss President Trump's proposal to secure mineral rights worth hundreds of billions of dollars in exchange for U.S. military aid. Reuters reports the latest draft includes a demand that the U.S. government's International Development Finance Corporation take control of a major pipeline used to send Russian natural gas to Europe. The Trump administration's terminating temporary protected status, known as TPS, for immigrants from Cameroon and Afghanistan living in the U.S. The move affects some 14,600 Afghans and around 7,900 Cameroonians who would be forced to leave the U.S. by May and June, respectively. The Council on American-Islamic Relations, CARE, California, said, quote, these individuals have fled war, persecution, and instability, and in the case of many Afghans, risked their lives to support U.S. operations. This decision will separate families and force people into the shadows. An immigration judge ruled Friday abducted Columbia graduate Mahmoud Khalil can be deported for taking part in student protests against Israel's war on Gaza. The government's removal case against Khalil will continue in Louisiana, while a separate case in a federal court in New Jersey proceeds, challenging the Trump administration's claims it can remove people whose, quote, belief statements or associations, unquote, it deems counter to foreign policy interests. Protesters took to the streets of New York City Saturday.
I thought that our democracy is under threat, that we are supposed to live in a country where people have rights, where people have First Amendment rights, have the right to freedom of speech, have the right to protest, have the right to take the streets. And I thought that this is under attack. If they can come for Mahmoud, then they can come for any of us.
We'll have the latest on Mahmoud Khalil's case after headlines with one of his lawyers. Meanwhile, The Washington Post reports the State Department found no evidence linking Tufts University student Ramesa Ozturk to anti-Semitic activities or public statements in support of terrorism before masked agents in plain clothes abducted her on the street in Somerville, Massachusetts, March 25th. The Post reports a State Department memo determined Secretary of State Marco Rubio did not have sufficient grounds for revoking Ozturk's visa, contradicting public accusations made by the Trump administration. The 30-year-old doctoral student from Turkey remains jailed at a privately run ICE detention center in Louisiana. El Salvador's authoritarian president, Nayib Bukele, is visiting the White House today. On Sunday, Secretary of State Marco Rubio said 10 more people were removed to El Salvador, claiming they were gang members. Nearly 300 people who were flown out of the U.S. since mid-March are now believed to be detained at the notorious SECAT mega prison. Most of them are Venezuelan nationals, many of them sent there simply on the basis of having tattoos, despite experts asserting this is not a sign of membership in the Tren de Aragua gang. On Saturday, the State Department told a judge, Kilmer Abrego Garcia, a Maryland father who was abducted to SECAT prison as an administrative error, is alive and still detained in El Salvador. A judge last week ordered the Trump administration to return him home to Maryland. We'll have more on his story with the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Maria Hinojosa, who attempted to get into SECAT when she was just in El Salvador. In more immigration news, a judge ruled ICE can carry out raids on places of worship, siding with the Trump administration. Over two dozen faith groups sought to block the policy, which they say violates the right of individuals to practice their religion. The Trump administration's exempted smartphones, computers, semiconductors, and other electronics from its sweeping 145% tariffs on Chinese goods. The exemption came amidst backlash over reports that Trump's trade war could increase the cost of Apple's latest iPhone by as much as $675. A new survey by University of Michigan researchers finds U.S. consumer confidence has plunged to its second lowest level on record. This comes amidst mounting evidence that Trump and his associates used insider knowledge to profit from stock market volatility set off by Trump's on-again, off-again tariffs. Video from the Oval Office last Wednesday showed Trump bragging about his friend, the investor Charles Schwab, making billions of dollars from market swings.
This is Charles Schwab. It's not just a company, it's actually an individual. And he made $4.5 billion today, and he made $900 million.
On Sunday, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren called for the Securities and Exchange Commission to launch an investigation.
It's entirely appropriate to have an investigation to make sure that Donald Trump, Donald Trump's family, Donald Trump's inner circle didn't get advance information and trade on that information.
The Trump administration is preparing deep cuts to NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, in its latest assault on climate science. Internal budget documents call for $1.7 billion in cuts to NOAA's $4.5 billion budget, with zero funding for climate, weather, and ocean laboratories. The Trump administration has proposed fully eliminating Head Start, the program created during President Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty that offers free child care to over a million low-income parents. That's according to USA Today, which reports cuts would also end meals, developmental screenings, and health care for nearly 800,000 children. This comes after a federal judge Friday ruled Elon Musk's Doge operation can access sensitive payment and data systems at the Treasury Department. 19 state attorneys general had sued to block access to the systems, which include bank account and Social Security information. In California, an estimated 36,000 people gathered in downtown Los Angeles Saturday for a fighting oligarchy tour organized by Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders.
We're fighting a president who undermines our Constitution every day and threatens our freedom of speech and assembly, and whose agents are rounding up innocent people off the streets, putting them in unmarked vans and throwing them in detention centers. That is what happens in dictatorships, not democracies. And we're going to stop that outrageous action on the part of the president.
Senator Sanders was joined by New York Democratic Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in Los Angeles. On Saturday evening, Sanders made a surprise appearance on stage at the Coachella Valley Music and Arts Festival, where he drew standing ovations as he called on people to fight for reproductive rights, workers' rights, access to health care, and to oppose Trump's authoritarianism. Ecuadorian President Daniel Noboa won re-election in a runoff vote Sunday, according to preliminary results, but his leftist rival, Luis Gonzalez, is challenging the official results, which show Noboa with a lead of nearly 12 points.
One of the exit polls gave us victory. None showed a difference like the one we are seeing at the Electoral Council. None. Therefore, I report before my people, before the media, before the world, that Ecuador is experiencing a dictatorship. We are facing the worst and most grotesque electoral fraud in the history of the Republic of Ecuador.
Noboa is a businessman and heir to a banana industry fortune who's made cracking down on crime his main priority. He's been condemned for skirting legal norms in the process, including declaring a state of internal armed conflict to more easily deploy the military. He declared another state of emergency on the eve of Sunday's election, barring protests and other gatherings and authorizing warrantless searches. In Gabon, Bryce Aligwe Nguema has won an eight-way race for the presidency by a landslide after an election on Saturday. Nguema led the 2023 military coup that deposed longtime authoritarian President Ali Bongo, whose family ruled Gabon for over half a century. Gabon is rich in oil, but has one of Africa's highest rates of inequality, with over half of rural voters living in poverty. Back in the United States, Pennsylvania authorities have arrested and charged a man suspected of setting fire to Governor Josh Shapiro's home while he and his family were asleep inside on Sunday morning. Shapiro and his family were safely evacuated. Governor Shapiro spoke following the incident.
This type of violence is not okay. This kind of violence is becoming far too common in our society.
The suspect said he'd been planning to beat Shapiro with a hammer if he encountered him. Authorities said they found a sledgehammer. The threat is drawing comparisons to the 2022 invasion of Congressmember Nancy Pelosi's San Francisco home by a far-right attacker who assaulted Pelosi's husband, Paul Pelosi, with a hammer. In South Carolina, a firing squad shot and killed a death row prisoner on Friday. Witnesses report Mikhail Mahdi cried out when multiple bullets struck him. He groaned twice and continued breathing for 80 seconds before taking a final gasping breath. It's the second time South Carolina used the firing squad in the past 5 weeks. And over 1,000 people rallied in Cambridge, Massachusetts to demand Harvard resist the Trump administration's threats of withholding $9 billion in federal funding. Trump warned he would take the money away unless the university eliminates DEI programming and suppresses pro-Palestinian voices. Harvard professors sued the Trump administration last week over the threat. This is a Harvard senior from Sweden at Saturday's protest.
I have talked to so many friends who were scared of just showing up today because we have seen our friends get their visas revoked, get detained, and potentially deported. So the self-silencing that is happening right now is really, really scary, and that is what we have to stand up against. I think that there is no more dangerous response to authoritarianism than self-silencing.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show with an update on Mahmoud Khalil, the Columbia University graduate who helped organize campus protests against Israel's assault on Gaza and who acted as a negotiator between the administration and the students. He's been detained in Louisiana since ICE arrested him last month. An immigration judge ruled Friday the Trump administration has grounds to deport Khalil for taking part in the protest, despite being a legal permanent resident of the United States. They revoked his green card. The decision by Assistant Chief Immigration Judge Jamie Comins in Louisiana came 48 hours after the government submitted their evidence, quote unquote, on Khalil, which is simply a two-page memo from Secretary of State Marco Rubio conceding Khalil had no criminal history and that the U.S. is seeking to deport him based purely on his, quote, belief statements or associations, unquote. Agreeing with the memo, the judge ruled Khalil's presence in the country posed, quote, potentially serious foreign policy consequences. Secretary of State Rubio's memo claimed allowing Khalil to remain in the United States would undermine, quote, U.S. policy to combat anti-Semitism around the world and in the United States, in addition to protect Jewish students from harassment and violence in the United States, unquote. On Saturday, hundreds gathered in Times Square demanding Mahmoud Khalil's release.
I thought that our democracy is under threat, that we are supposed to live in a country where people have rights, where people have First Amendment rights, have the right to freedom of speech, have the right to protest, have the right to take the streets. And I thought that this is under attack. If they can come for Mahmoud, then they can come for any of us.
At last count, over 500 international students at more than 80 colleges and universities have had their visas revoked in recent weeks. On Friday, Mahmoud Khalil addressed the court after the ruling. He said, quote, I would like to quote what you said last time that there's nothing that's more important to this court than due process rights and fundamental fairness. Clearly, what we witnessed today, neither of these principles were present today or in this whole process. This is exactly why the Trump administration has sent me to this court, 1,000 miles away from my family. I just hope that the urgency that you deem fit for me are afforded to the hundreds of others who've been here without hearing for months, unquote. Mahmoud Khalil has separate court cases playing out in two states. The Louisiana case is focused on his deportation order. That's an immigration court. And the New Jersey case is focused on his habeas petition challenging the legality of his detention. That's a federal court. For more, we're joined in studio by Diala Shamas, one of the attorneys representing Mahmoud Khalil, senior staff attorney for the Center for Constitutional Rights. Diala, welcome back to Democracy Now! Can you just explain what's happening here? The judge said he can be deported, but that is not where it ends.
Absolutely, Amy, and thanks for having me. So it's important for people to understand that there are two parallel tracks here. The judge is an immigration judge on Friday, and she simply rubber-stamped that memo that says in broad terms that the Secretary of State determined that Mahmoud Khalil presents, that his continued presence presents foreign policy consequences. And she essentially said that her hands are tied, she deferred to the executive, and told Mahmoud's lawyers to take it up with Congress. And so that is the immigration judge, and it's important also to underscore that we were not surprised by that outcome. That outcome is exactly the reason that the Trump administration has been whisking people away to places like Louisiana and Texas, because they believe those forms are favorable, but also why they want to keep these cases in immigration court and not have federal court review. So we have this parallel federal court case, which is the one that we're really focused on because that's where the constitutional claims, his First Amendment and due process claims, are being adjudicated. We are asking, we have pending motions before the federal court in New Jersey, they are still pending, to release Mahmoud Khalil and to challenge his detention and to challenge the basis for his detention.
And explain why New Jersey and not New York?
Well, there's a few different ways in which the government has tried to whisk Mahmoud away from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. Initially, we were in New York because that's where his lawyers understood him to be when they filed the habeas corpus petition. But turns out that they had already moved him to New Jersey. And after a fight where the government tried to move the case to federal court in Louisiana, we were eventually able to win that first big win for Mahmoud and be in New Jersey. So New Jersey is, of course, closer to where his counsel are. It's where he was when we filed that petition. And it's closer to his community. So we're still fighting to bring him back to this area.
And the significance of him being picked up in Columbia University housing, having sent a letter like the day before to the president of Columbia saying he was very afraid about what was going to happen. He was there coming from Iftar with his wife, Dr. Noor Abdullah, who is about to give birth.
Yeah, she's due later this month, and that's why we are moving with urgency. The government is trying to slow down the case in federal court and speed it up in immigration court because they know that that's a favorable venue for them. Of course,
can the courts clash, immigration and federal?
Federal courts are where we're bringing the constitutional claims and ultimately where we want him to be ordered released. There's a complex way in which federal and immigration courts I wouldn't say clash, but they have two entirely different functions. Remember, federal court judges have life tenure. They are the third branch of government. And immigration courts, although we call them immigration courts, they function like a traffic court. They're administrative courts. The judges are hired essentially by the executive branch and so are much more at the mercy of the executive branch. So the more robust process, the due process rights, those are all in federal court, and that's why we're pushing the case forward there. And I know that the headlines that a judge found him deportable have been really scary to many, but people don't need to understand that was not a surprising
outcome.
Was
he in court?
He was in court, and he read that incredible statement that you read earlier in the show. And I will say that statement is so emblematic of the poise with which Mahmoud has carried himself since the beginning of this ordeal, and also the care for others that he's exhibited since day one of his detention. You know, that he used the spotlight on him to shine a spotlight on others. And that's an important thing to underscore, and that he's modeling for all of us. He has not for 1 minute stopped highlighting the situation in Gaza, where we have now more than 50,000 people who've been killed, and wanting to make sure that we all know that that is the reason that he is being subject, he and many others are being subject to this retaliatory policy of arresting, detaining, and transferring people simply for their protests.
So what is the timetable for the New Jersey federal court? And when the judge hears his case there, does he, as he was in immigration court, get to be in a New Jersey court?
We hope so. I mean, the judge in federal court in New Jersey understands the urgency. Right after our Friday hearing in immigration court, the judge called counsel in to federal court and asked for a report back from what happened that day, and also has requested, you know, the transcripts and the details of the hearing. So we're hopeful that he understands the urgency and that he will not allow the Trump administration to bypass the authorities and run roughshod over due process by accelerating the case in immigration court.
I wanted to ask you about another case, but before I do, let me just read what Dr. Noor Abdullah had to say. In a statement that was read during Friday's briefing, Mahmoud's wife, Dr. Abdullah, said, quote, "My husband's a political prisoner who's being deprived of his rights because he believes Palestinians deserve equal dignity and freedom. There's nothing the government can say about my husband that can silence this truth." How does that weigh in the court, at the court level?
We are bringing fundamental First Amendment challenges, showing that Mahmoud was targeted as part of this retaliatory policy because of his speech. But I'd like to say something, if I may, about this First Amendment point. Oftentimes, we talk about the First Amendment as part of the Constitution that's there to protect even the most unpopular opinions, and that the even controversial views should be protected. But here with Mahmoud, it's important to underscore that he's actually in the majority. His views, the reasons he's being retaliated against, the reason the Trump administration wants to silence him and many others like him is because they are widely held. The notion that Palestinians in Gaza should not be subject to a genocide, as the International Court of Justice found, the notion that 50,000 people are that we shouldn't be funding and sending weapons to a military that has been targeting civilians and families the way that the Israeli government has been, that is a widely held political view, and there is some gaslighting that this administration is engaging in by suggesting that it is a minority that is against foreign policy. This is fundamentally because they're afraid of this very popular political movement here in the United States, and that's what Mahmoud has been shining a light on throughout since the beginning that he's of his having the spotlight.
I wanted to turn to another high-profile immigration case. In a unanimous ruling last week, and I just wanted you to explain this, the Supreme Court ruled, ordered the Trump administration to, quote, facilitate the return of Kilmar Abrego Garcia to the United States after the Maryland resident, father of three, with no criminal record, was denied due process and sent to the notorious Cecat prison in El Salvador. But the court remained vague on how exactly this would happen. And the Trump administration's claimed has no way of ensuring his safe return. In a minute, we're going to speak with Maria Hinojosa, who tried to get into that Cecat prison. And we'll talk about Bukele, the president of El Salvador's visit with Trump today. But if you, as a lawyer, could just explain what this unanimous ruling means when they say Trump should facilitate him coming home.
Well, of course, there is this ambiguous paragraph, and this administration is trying to get the most out of that ambiguous language. And what we are seeing ultimately is actually a through line between the Mahmoud Khalil case and the El Salvador case, which is the Trump administration is invoking unfettered executive power and authority, and invoking this notion of foreign relations, which they said here in their filing on Sunday, is a reason to not interfere in how they're dealing with bringing people back. And so you can't do whatever you want, run nilly-willy over people's rights by simply invoking foreign relations, foreign affairs, foreign policy. There is nothing more domestic of a matter than the notion that courts should have the ability to oversee how we rip people away from their families here in the United States.
Diala Shamas, I want to thank you so much for being with us. One of the attorneys representing Mahmoud Khalil, senior staff attorney for the Center for Constitutional Rights. Coming up next, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Maria Hinojosa, just back from El Salvador, where she attempted to get into the SECOT prison, the supermax prison, where Kilmar Abrego Garcia is being held. This, as President Trump meets with the president of El Salvador, who has called himself the coolest dictator. Stay with us. By Nas El-Diwan. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Trump's meeting in the White House today with the Salvadoran president, Nayib Bukele, saying the two are working together to, quote, eradicate terrorist organizations. Secretary of State Marco Rubio posted Sunday on social media, quote, last night, another 10 criminals from the MS-13 and Tren de Aragua foreign terrorist organizations arrived in El Salvador. The alliance between POTUS and President Nayib Bukele has become an example for security and prosperity in our hemisphere, unquote. President Bukele has been a key ally in allowing the Trump administration to remove hundreds of alleged Venezuelan and Salvadoran gang members to El Salvador's notorious SECOT prison with little or no evidence or due process. When the Trump administration earlier ignored federal judge James Boasberg's order that, quote, any plane containing these folks that is going to take off or is in the air needs to be returned to the United States, President Bukele tweeted in response, oopsie, too late. And that was retweeted by Secretary of State Marco Rubio. This comes as the Department of Justice argued in court filings Sunday the administration's not required to return wrongfully expelled Maryland resident Kilmar Abrego Garcia, despite a unanimous Supreme Court ruling that ordered the government to facilitate his return, but remained vague on how exactly this would happen. The husband and father of three has no criminal record. President Trump was questioned by a reporter Friday about Kilmar Abrego Garcia.
Is that the one that was not Tren de Aragua, but he was MS-13?
Just the one that they've said needs to come back.
No, but was he MS-13? Because I only know by that. I mean, I don't know which one. But if the Supreme Court said bring somebody back, I would do that. I respect the Supreme Court.
And the lower court judge as well. He's been asking for daily updates.
I'm not talking about the lower court. I have great respect.
we're joined by Maria Hinojosa, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, founder of Futuro Media, host of Latino USA, co-executive producer of the Pulitzer Prize-winning podcast Suave, which is starting its new season this week. And we're going to talk about that soon. But first, it's great to have you in studio. Talk about your reporting trip to El Salvador and today's meeting between President Trump and President Bukele of El Salvador.
Amy, it's great to be with you. I was in El Salvador several weeks ago. I went down to do a story actually that has to do with women behind bars. We'll talk about that when we break that story coming up soon. So I was attempting to get access to the women's prison as well as CECOT.
And explain what CECOT is.
CECOT is a new prison. It is a, how can you say it? It's like an industrialized form of prison making, right? Super new, built up, lights on all the time. But the problem is not only the way in which the prison is constructed, but because of Bukele and basically de facto martial law in El Salvador, when you are put in that prison, you have no due process. You have no visitors, Amy, no visitors. So when we attempted to go to another prison, Ilopango prison, which used to be the big prison until it was replaced by CECOT. That's actually right on a major thoroughway, but there were no people coming in and out. And I just think it's really important for people to understand that. When you are put in prison in El Salvador, you do not have rights for people to come and visit you. Almost no right to even get a lawyer. It is extraordinary. And the only person ultimately, Amy, it's gonna sound strange, I know it sounded strange to me, was you get permission to get into CECOT by President Bukele. So that would basically be like President Trump having to give you access to any federal prison that you want to visit. It's an extraordinary hold on power that he controls who will be able to go into that prison. And any journalist who goes has these mixed feelings because they know that they are being used by the Bukele administration to put images out there that put fear in a lot of people. Let us be clear that the people who were first taken by the United States and sent to El Salvador, those people, the majority are not criminals. They do not have a criminal record. So this is why it should be of concern to everybody that these are just people who are, by the way, they're not being deported, Amy. Deported means you have gone through a legal process. You have seen a judge. You have been formally deported. These people were removed. It's another way of saying it, but they were removed. No due process, no seeing a judge. Then some people say, well, isn't that really that they were kidnapped and are now being held in El Salvador? And some people would go further and say, weren't they trafficked? If they do not know, if they don't have access to their documents, they don't know where they're going, they don't know who's taking them, they've been told not to speak to anyone, and they don't know when they're going to be released. That is what is the label for somebody who's been trafficked.
It's amazing to watch the video footage of the men being taken to the prison. It was all, I mean, we know how Trump feels about reality television, so carefully filmed. And the images of Kristi Noem, the former South Dakota governor, head of Homeland Security, with her $75,000 Rolex, standing in front of these caged men. This is Salvadoran President Nayib Bukele addressing an adoring crowd at CPAC 2024 in Washington, D.C.
We did the unthinkable to cleanse our society. We arrested the terrorists, but we have to remove corrupt judges and corrupt attorneys and prosecutors. These corrupt judges and prosecutors were setting the gang members free.
And Nancy Pelosi!
And it wasn't just the gangs. The corrupt system worked in tandem with the so-called international community, the NGOs, and of course the fake news, just like it happens here in the United States.
So as you have Bukele going after the NGOs, the fake news, the same language Trump uses, Bukele calling himself the coolest dictator. The significance of this meeting today, Maria, who's modeling themselves on who?
So, Amy, you and I have been covering the story of El Salvador and the United States' involvement in politics in El Salvador since the 1980s.
When the U.S. funded death squads, a paramilitary organization.
There were four Maryknoll nuns who were raped and murdered by men who were, in fact, de facto trained by the United States, right? People, many young people don't know this. But never, Amy, did I imagine that we would be in a situation where the Trump administration, the United States, is looking to El Salvador, to the Bukele administration, and saying, huh, we kind of like what you're doing. Maybe we should take a cue from you. Why don't we just declare our own form of martial law and deny due process not just to people who were not born in this country, but to everyone. But it's important to know that like any dictatorship, it is not forever. And what's happened now because of Bukele's administration allowing itself to be used by the Trump administration to house undocumented people, there are cracks that are starting to show. You would not have seen a protest against Bukele in El Salvador. You have in the past month. So people are taking to the streets. The cracks are beginning to show because you cannot have a carceral country without people saying, hey, this is too much. You have taken people with no due process who are innocent and holding them behind bars for decades.
And hundreds of people have died in Salvador's jails and their prisons.
Yeah, and so there are people who are dying right now, Amy, on U.S. territory in detention camps or when they are attempting to cross the border. So death, because you're an immigrant, because you were not born in this country, is a reality for people here. And the horror that, you know, in our country now, there are firing squads. So it is very dystopian. I have to say, being in El Salvador where you only use dollars, it's just, it's El Salvador, but the only currency that is used is dollars. It's very strange. I do know how quarters are going to survive in the world. It's because people use quarters to buy pupusas in El Salvador. And it's just like, you're using American dollars. Also, Bukele is a mastermind of public relations. He's attempting to change the entire country of El Salvador to a surf city. Go surfing. Just go
the
surfing.
The country of El Salvador is called Surf City.
Basically, that is the new public relations, and he's selling this to American retirees to go and buy up land in El Salvador and make that their home of retirement.
So when we see their men with their heads shaved, not having due process in the United States, most don't know most of the names of the hundreds of people who were sent, and this question of whether Kilmer will be released. You can't have a higher meeting than President Trump with Bukele today. The U.S. paying millions of dollars to imprison the refugees, if you will, those who are kidnapped. We'll see what happens. We'll follow this up tomorrow. But the effect it's having on immigrant communities in the United States, like Chicago, what canceled its Cinco de Mayo celebration?
Amy, that was, first of all, the fact that the United States government is resisting returning Kilmer should be of concern for every single one of us. For myself, not being born in this country, there's that heightened interest. But everyone should care about the fact that the United States is just taking people and removing them without any due process. When I read that Chicago, my hometown, where I was raised, Southsider, that they are canceling the Cinco de Mayo celebration and parade, and what struck me was we don't have anything to celebrate. And this is something, Amy, that as a journalist covering last year, deeply covering the Latino and Latina vote, and being in Latino and Latina communities and hearing Latino voters saying, oh, we like Trump because our economy's terrible and he's a great businessman and I want to be like him, let's get him in. And it's like, did you already forget what happened? This is not new. Our communities have lived through this, but the heightened police state that all of us are living in, by the way, Amy, everyone is only talking about, like, focusing on immigrant communities. We already know that American citizens are being taken out of the country, mistakenly being deported. Oh, whoops. Again, whoopsie. We know now that—
And the lawyer who admitted, the Justice Department lawyer, that they're being so-called deported by mistake has been suspended, put on leave.
Correct. So everyone in the country now, Amy, has to be thinking, do I have a copy of my passport with me? Where's my birth certificate? Wow, where is my birth certificate? Do I know? It is not enough in the United States now to be walking around with your driver's license. And that is the thing, Amy, that I have been talking about for decades, which is, oh, you think it's only impacting people like me who are immigrants? It's impacting you. who were the secret police who were taking protesters off the streets in Seattle and Portland at the height of the Black Lives Matter movement in 2020. They were Border Patrol. What is the largest law enforcement agency in the United States? Border Patrol. Which has the least amount of oversight? Border Patrol. That impacts all of us, not just those of us who are not born in the United States.
Well, this is a conversation we will continue. Mariana Hoss is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and founder of Futuro Media. She's the host of Latino USA, co-executive producer of the Pulitzer Prize-winning podcast Suave, which is where we're going next. Tomorrow, Suave, and the second season of this podcast is being released. Stay with us.
Y neblina, diamantes cristalina, no lo es. Humilde hogar de lámina y cartón, estallan en el cerro con los rayos del sol. Nadie nos dará, gobierno, majestad, la necesidad es ajena, no sienten ni pena. Necesidades ajenas no sienten ni pena. Allá donde no había, no soy necesito permiso para la vida. Soy rica en esperanzas y de reto no me niego. Le daré vista hasta el más ciego. Soy rica en esperanzas y de reto no me niego.
Estoy aquí, I am here, by Quetzal and Martha Gonzalez. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. This week, the Pulitzer Prize-winning podcast Suave is back. It's starting its second season, following up on the story of the release of former juvenile lifer David Luis Suave Gonzalez from prison. Since season one, Suave has started a relationship and a career, and season two looks at how his freedom is complicated by the long shadow of prison. This is the trailer.
Suave, so this is the first time that you've been back in the studio. How are you feeling?
Let's get it done.
It's been 7 years since David Luis Suave Gonzalez was released from prison after being sentenced to serve life without parole as a teenager.
We're driving away.
Yes.
Suave, we're driving away from Crater Park.
And it was his unexpected friendship with journalist Maria Hinojosa that brought this story to a national spotlight.
Luis Suave Gonzalez is working hard to give back.
Do you like it when people call you Mr. Pulitzer?
Listen, I ain't gonna lie. That plays in my eagles.
But not everything is what it seems.
Being free is not what everybody think it is. It's really not. Everybody hype it up like, all your pains and misery are gone. That's bullshit, man. My miseries and pains are just starting.
Because life on the outside means a whole new set of problems, from dealing with lifetime parole.
I can't drink, I cannot smoke a little bit of weed, I can't travel. I'm like, damn here, everybody here got a gun. And I'm like, I gotta get out of here.
Trailer for season two of Suave. As we reported in 2021, the podcast came after Maria Hinojosa met Suave while she was giving a talk at the Graterford State Correctional Institution in Pennsylvania. In fact, Suave was sort of the inspiration for her talk there. He was pushing people to get that great Latina journalist into the prison. They stayed in touch after they met through letters, visits, and phone calls that Maria recorded. Season one included dramatic exchanges like this one, when the Supreme Court ruled it's unconstitutional to impose mandatory sentences of life without parole on juveniles. The ruling was retroactive and gave thousands of people, including Suave, a chance at freedom. This is a clip of the call. This is Suave's call to Maria to announce the good news.
Thank you for using Securus. You may start the conversation now.
Hello, hello.
Hello, Maria. How are you doing this morning?
Suave, it is Friday, June 9th at 10:44 in the morning. What's going on? I thought we were going to talk at 2. What happened?
I wanted to let you know that the judge told the lawyer this morning we don't have to wait no longer. June 26th, 17 days from today, we bring him to court so he can go see parole in July.
What? So it's like totally not a normal day for you in prison after 30 years. Today is...
And I had a dream like that I was eating Chinese food.
What were you eating?
Egg roll and some pork fried rice. And then I woke up and I'm in bed.
So that's David Luis Suave Gonzalez in season one of the Pulitzer Prize-winning podcast Suave. I mean, it's more than being in a podcast, that incredible moment when he learns after 31 years he could be free. As season two begins this week, and Suave is now an artist and author of a new book just out, titled From Prison to the Pulitzer Prizes. He's joining us in our studio for more, along with Maria Hinojosa, co-executive producer of Suave, founder of Futuro Media, host of Latino USA. We welcome you both back to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us. Congratulations on the Pulitzer Prize once again, that 2022 Pulitzer Prize. Suave, in season one, I mean, this fact that we're following you for decades in prison, and then you're free, but it hasn't been so easy. Talk about what freedom means to you.
Freedom means to me being off parole. Currently, I'm on parole for the rest of my life. That's not freedom. That's reporting to somebody. My move of being monitored by the DOC, that's not freedom. A lot of people think you home, you got a good job, you got good friends. Yes, but I'm not really free. You know, there was this thing that Maria used to tell me when I was in prison. You're in the big prison and the little prison. I was in the little prison when I was inside because I expected to have all my phone calls monitored. I expected to have every move monitored. But I come home, I wasn't expecting this. I wasn't expecting to report to somebody. I need to go across city lines. Can I go? I need to go shopping. This place, can I go? I need to travel. Can I go? And if they feel like they don't want to give you permission, they can say no. You know, so that's not freedom. To me, freedom means totally free, being able to do what I want to do in life. If I want to drink, being able to have a beer if I want to have a beer, being able to smoke a joint if I want to smoke a joint, even though I don't. But if I want to, I can't, because I could get violated and get put back in prison. If somebody make a false phone call and say, well, he looked at me wrong, I feel threat, I could go back to prison. That's not freedom. When the United States Supreme Court said that it was unconstitutional to keep a juvenile in prison for life, then it should be unconstitutional to keep that same juvenile on parole for life.
I want to go to another aspect of being out of prison, to a clip from season two with Suave, exploring how to build friendships after being incarcerated for over 3 decades.
After years trying to decipher their relationship, pen pals, interviewer, interviewee, creative collaborators, Maria and Suave have been saying the F word openly now, friendship. Although, what does it actually mean? I recently asked both Suave and Maria to give me their own definitions of friendship.
Friends are basically someone who you would be prepared
to take a bullet for. A friend is somebody who you have deep communication with on multiple layers of your life, and where there is deep love and respect.
First of all, I can't describe it because I don't know what friendship is. I really don't. I have a lot of people that I associate with, but when it comes to friends, I don't even know what that is, because I come from a place where there is no friends.
And this friendship in particular between Maria and Suave, it's had some highs, but also it's had some really rough spots.
Maria, hold on.
Let me talk, Maria, because I don't think
I need to finish.
Hold on.
Okay. If you want to go there, you want to know what? F*** you that you didn't call me.
You ain't going to apologize to me. I'm Maria, and also nobody groped me. And I was like, all right, but.
And that's when I said to him, I was like, no one treats me this way, Suave. No one.
Friendship, or intimacy in general, for that matter, has been one of the biggest challenges for Suave since getting out of prison. How to connect with someone, how to be vulnerable, how to be open. All of these things that he never really had to think about, because in prison, it was so important to protect himself, to close himself off from other people.
Someone that's been in prison for decades, it's gonna take a long time gain that trust, because in the back of my mind, always gonna be, if I ever get locked up, will you stick by me?
That's Suave. It's the second season. That voice also Julieta Martinelli, who is the host of this series. Maria, you did the first series. You both won the Pulitzer Prize. So why the second series? And at the end of it, Suave's freed.
So we didn't know that there was going to be a season two to Suave. I didn't expect to win the Pulitzer Prize and an IDA award. Suave and I have this strange thing, which is that we record every single phone call that we make. It's just part of who we are. That is part of our relationship, journalist, source, and friends. We're like
Maria, FBI, in a hosa.
But So we didn't know there was going to be a season two. Thanks to the Mellon Foundation and the president, Elizabeth Alexander, the great poet, they believed in the project and they said, we want a season two. And we actually, season two, Amy, is so dramatic. And as soon as I finished binging on season two, I called up Suave and I said, thank you. Thank you for telling your story for everyone to hear. It is incredibly dramatic. Suave is incredibly vulnerable. And we are asking that question about what is freedom, what is happiness, and what 31 years behind bars, seven of them in solitary confinement, what it looks like when you get on the outside.
Seven of the 31 in solitary confinement. You get out, you are free. People are saying, how does it feel to be free? You don't feel free, and you have a mental breakdown.
Yes. Y'all gonna hear that in season two. Because I've really never had treatment. I never really went to therapy after incarceration to deal with the trauma. So I come home, you know, I'm living to other people's expectation, not my expectation. I want to fit in. And this is the problem of people that serve a lot of years in prison. They come home, they want to fit in, they say yes to everything, and not knowing that what we're doing is re-traumatizing ourselves. A lot of us are not ready to fit in to normal society. We need treatment. The DOC, the Department of Correction, need to at least take ownership. They need to take ownership for a lot of people coming home untreated. And trauma is real. And you're going to hear that in season two when my car was stolen, that I was just triggered to a space that nobody wanted to be in. And I realized that I need help. And I went to therapy, because it was affecting my life, it was affecting my family's life, the people that love me. And then I start getting phone calls from people. It's like, I'm going through the same thing. But they're ashamed to speak about it, because I don't want you to think I'm crazy because I'm going through a crisis. You know, I want to live up to that expectation. I'm a Pulitzer Prize winner. I'm this. But at the end of the day, I'm human, and I'm a person that served 31 years incarcerated without ever seeing a therapist. Mm-hmm.
And we're going to do part two and post online at tomorrow.
Fiber Plus Internet is now available in Sandpoint and King Cove. GCI offers high-speed internet in your community at the same plans and pricing as in Anchorage. More information is available at gci.com/internet.